Welcome. I'm Mark Hertzgard, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We got a great show for you today. Should the oil company ExxonMobil be investigated for lying about climate change? Two leading Democratic presidential candidates think so, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Today on Your Call, we'll be talking with journalists whose investigative reporting gave rise to the accusations that, as the hashtag puts it, Exxon knew that its products were dangerous, knew that its products were dangerous, but deliberately denied it to protect its business model. Joining us will be Suzanne Rust with the Los Angeles Times and Jack Cushman of Inside Climate News. And, of course, we welcome your calls and emails here on the Friday Media Roundtable at KLW. Welcome, Suzanne and Jack. Can you both hear me?
Yes, glad to be here.
Great. Okay. So as we always do on Your Call, the Media Roundtable on Fridays, we like to try and start off with some positive note and give some kudos to a reporter or a news organization who's done a particularly good job this week. Suzanne, could we start with you? What kind of coverage did you see this week that impressed you?
I've been following this whole Theranos case that the Wall Street Journal has been working on, and see so many parallels with what we did on Exxon with this, and it's fascinating watching this all develop. They did some really amazing investigative reporting, finding former employees to come out and talk about concerns they had about the company, and just sort of watching a company that was operating not under the radar, but sort of behind the scenes. It's just been a fascinating glimpse into that world.
And just quickly, could you say the name of the company again and tell us what it does for those who don't know?
Oh, it's called Theranos, and it's actually based in Silicon Valley. And what they say they have done is pioneered a blood test, which instead of sort of detecting diseases or looking for problems by taking several vials of blood, they should only be able to find these the signs of the pathology with just a prick of the finger, just a few drops of blood. And so that's their technology, and apparently it may not be all they have said it was.
And that's the Wall Street Journal's reporting this week, noted by Suzanne Rush. She's one of the reporters who's contributed to the Los Angeles Times investigation of ExxonMobil. She teaches at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. And Jack Cushman of Inside Climate News, what stood out for you this week?
Well, what caught my attention actually was the stories on the cod fishery in the Gulf of Maine and the problems that they're having. We've known that cod fishery was in trouble for a long time and the fishing industry, but the articles, Inside Climate News had one, but so did the New York Times. It was widely covered. It turns out that the science is showing that climate change is a big factor and the inability of this cod fishery to recover now that controls are being put on the fishing there. I love cod, and just today I got on my bike and went down to the fish store and bought tonight's cod dinner, but it comes from Iceland, where they've got a very sustainable cod fishery going there, and I hope that our New Englanders find their way to that spot sometime.
That's Jack Cushman. He's an environmental and energy reporter with Inside Climate News. And as we always do, we'll, of course, provide links to the stories that they mentioned here at yourcallradio.org. So let's dive in now and talk about these groundbreaking investigations into what Exxon knew about climate change. First, let's make clear, these were two separate investigations, one by the Los Angeles Times, one by Inside Climate News. And I'd like to start, as a reporter, frankly, who's covered this story over the years, with the real smoking gun in all this, which is a memo that Exxon's top public relations official wrote in 1988, I believe, which was long after Exxon's own scientists had privately told the company's executives and board of directors that climate change was real and burning oil and other fossil fuels was the main cause. But the PR official in this smoking gun memo said that Exxon's public position must be, quote, emphasize the uncertainty, unquote, emphasize the uncertainty of climate science. Suzanne, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was your team at the LA Times that uncovered that smoking gun memo, right? Can you tell us how that came about?
Yeah, so I run this program at the Journalism School at Columbia University, and last year I had four reporters who had just graduated from the program working on this story with me. Katie Jennings, who was one of those reporters, went down to Texas, I believe, last November because she heard about these ExxonMobil archives. We didn't have much hope that there would be anything in there, assuming everything would be scrubbed, but lo and behold, she came back with these documents, and this was a draft memo, so we do need to highlight that it was a draft, But it was a memo written by the public relations department, a man named Joe Carlson, who used to work for Exxon's PR. And we aren't exactly sure who it was for. It was definitely for top managers and executives of the company. But it was in response to a whole sort of suite of events that had occurred during 1988 that sort of positioned Exxon to respond. And the company's response, which is in fact sort of I find completely compelling, because they had been, as Inside Climate News has also shown, really been at the forefront of climate research for years, realized that what was happening, these developments, this sort of the beating of the drum of concern that was developing around climate change, really was going to call for a reaction from them. And their reaction seemed to be, let's emphasize the doubt because this is not going to be good for our bottom line.
Yeah, 1988, of course, was the year that NASA scientist James Hansen came to the United States Senate and testified that man-made global warming was real and happening and threatened terrible damages. And by the end of the year, you had Time Magazine since making Planet Earth its instead, you know, usually they have the person of the year, but this time it was the endangered Planet Earth as person of the year. So that was how, that's the context for that memo of emphasize the uncertainty. And you're telling me that your reporter just went into Exxon's archives and walked out with that? How does that work?
It's, so they're stored at, I think it's called the Don Briscoe Center, which is based at the University of Texas. And so anybody can go in there. You are not allowed to publish anything that you get from there, but you can take pictures and use it for research purposes. So she went in there and took pictures of all these documents and came home with her photos. And that also explains the reason we weren't able to put the documents up online. There are copyright issues around
them. Uh-huh. So that's the story behind the smoking gun and all this. And, of course, a lot of the climate activists who fastened onto this story are making the connection between that memo, the emphasize the uncertainty memo of ExxonMobil, and the infamous memo of the tobacco industry in 1971. Their PR guy said privately at that point, quote, doubt is our product, unquote. So did you, when you saw that as a reporting team, did that same connection, the tobacco connection, if you will, did that occur to you as well?
I making the parallels to the tobacco case, I think are very easy to do. And I think we saw this, and I think we saw this and realized this was a really big deal. That this was really, again, a company who had been looking into this for quite a long time. They're very sophisticated. I mean, this company has the smartest engineers and scientists on the planet working for them. And to see this sort of written so blatantly, which sort of spoke against everything they had done up to this point, was quite stunning to us. So, yes, I think we realized the magnitude of it at that moment.
That's Suzanne Rush. She's part of the L.A. Times team on this. I want to bring in Jack Cushman now of Inside Climate News. Jack, if I'm not mistaken, you and your Inside Climate News colleagues were actually the first out of the box in this recent iteration of this. Can you take us through your process a little bit? It's remarkable, really, that both your story and the L.A. Times story are based, I think it's important for listeners to know this, they're based on Exxon's own documents and then a lot of quotes that you guys got from former officials. So how did you and your colleagues at Inside Climate News, how did you decide that this was a story you could get, and then how did you get it?
Right. Well, of course, the Exxon's latter-day posture on climate change is really well understood and has been thoroughly documented in, you know, hundreds of peer-reviewed articles and whole books and reports by nonprofit groups like the Union of Concerned Scientists. So we've known all of our reporting careers, it seems, that Exxon was casting light on the uncertainty and using it to stave off action on climate change. And with the world about to reach some big decisions on climate change, we decided that we'd like to know where that all came from, and could we go back as far as possible into Exxon's engagement with climate science and just see what we found, on the theory that, you know, like the publication of the Pentagon Papers illuminated the Vietnam War long after those memos were written, that we might illuminate our current situation and Exxon's recent behavior in light of what they knew early on. And, of course, we didn't know what they knew. our approach was a little different. We have visited the archives, but we spent a lot of time just trying to find people who worked at Exxon in the old days and government officials who worked with Exxon. And very quickly it became apparent that there were people at Exxon deeply engaged in climate science in the late 1970s, a time when really this was well before the issue emerged into the public consciousness in a big way. The National Academy of Sciences was working on it. The Energy Department, just being formed, was starting to take a look at it. And Exxon had teams doing innovative, cutting-edge research. They were equipping an oil tanker with sensors to go out and measure the carbon uptake of the oceans, which was a major uncertainty. And you'll notice in our coverage, because of our approach of talking to people and finding out what they remembered and asking if they had documents, and as well as going into the archives, we were able to assemble a lot of documents that we could publish. And so we've published quite a few documents, a dozen, two dozen, on our webpage. Some of these have been published before, but we think that they are of interest. But our readers can go to the quotes that we used in the documents and look at the documents themselves and place our quotes in the context of the documents. And here's what they find.
The documents are impressive, Jack, but I have to tell you, as a fellow reporter, what was most impressive to me is how you got so many former Exxon officials to talk to you. You're calling from, let's be clear about this, the name of your enterprise is Inside Climate News. Now, if you're a former Exxon official, doesn't the name even of Inside Climate News going to make you a little suspicious? And yet you guys got, obviously, a lot of these individuals to talk to you. How did you do that?
Well, we just kept asking questions. You know, scientists love to tell the truth, and we were talking to scientists, and many of them are no longer at Exxon. Of course, they were engaged at the beginning. What was clear to us is that they were really interested in the science that they were pursuing. They recognized the uncertainties. Science is all about uncertainty, but they wanted to grapple with it. They embraced the uncertainty. And then what happened at Exxon is, as time went by and the information of the risks that they were facing became more and more evident, you know, first they embraced the uncertainty and then they fell in love with the uncertainty, and then they married the uncertainty. And I think that the best hope is that they don't live happily ever after with the uncertainty. It's time to you know, get a divorce.
Okay, now I want to bring in Exxon's side of this controversy. The company has put out a number of press statements, and they have called your reporting, I say you collectively, among other things, they've described it as, quote, inaccurate and deliberately misleading, unquote. ExxonMobil has opened a webpage called Get the Facts, where it invites people to hear its views on these issues, and we'll link to that, of course, here at Your Call Radio. But here on this show, I want to ask both of you, Jack and Suzanne, tell us how you, as reporters, interacted with ExxonMobil while doing these stories. At what point in your investigation did you contact the actual public affairs departments of Exxon, and what were those interactions like? Suzanne, why don't you start?
I would say initially my interactions with them were quite friendly and open. I think once the first story published, that was no longer the case.
Well, what did you tell them you were doing initially?
I told them exactly what we were doing. I contacted them as soon as I had the first story in a pretty good place, and told them that we were writing a story about their operations in the Arctic, that we had evidence that they had actually used climate change models into their own projections of their business operations up there. And they got back to me with a fairly typical sort of public relations response that, you know, they have always been interested in climate change research. They have been doing research for the past 30 years, et cetera, et cetera. And so in any case, it was very upfront and forward. And once the story came out,
things went downhill from there.
Yes.
what was the first sign that maybe your marriage was on the rocks with Exxon?
I think there were a couple angry notes.
Or the dating relationship, let's put it that way. You got some angry notes, did you?
There was on their blog. It was very apparent that they were unhappy with the reporting. And yes, then when I called about the second story, it was clear they were not happy about the first. And I think there was also a follow up. So after we came out with the first story, to U.S. reps in California wrote a letter to the Department of Justice asking for an investigation. And when I asked for a response on that, it was very clear that I was not in their good graces any longer.
How about you, Jack, at Inside Climate News? At what point in your investigation did you reach out to ExxonMobil officially?
Well, we also first contacted them with some initial questions as our stories were coming together back in August. You know, we weren't writing these stories for 8 months. We were investigating for 8 months, and it was really in August that we sat down and started to write. And as we formulated our questions, we started with a set of general questions to them, which we sent them a little more than a week before our first story was published. And we had to pester a little bit and say, you know, we are going to publish a story here. We had a quick response to our first set of questions, which was, frankly, a familiar response. We've had a very similar response from them on a different story in July, and I've seen the elements of this response in their writings to various inquiries dating back, you know, over the years. It was boilerplate. And then we had a series of exchanges with them, which I can't really get into because they kept saying in their emails, this is off the record, and we kept saying we want to be on the record, and they took a pretty tense tone. Once we published our first piece, our experience was the same. They said, we're not going to have any more communication with you. We said our door is always open to communicate with you, and we really haven't had good communications with them since.
I have not seen in all of Exxon's response to either one of your stories, though, any specific accusation that you got a fact wrong. A, have I missed that? Did they somehow call you out on some specifics there? And B, what is the going forward now? You know, are you guys still going to be investigating further?
I would say myself. We have not been told of factual errors. What they have accused us of comes under the rubric of, quote, cherry-picking. And this is an allegation that we're presenting the wrong news from the documents, and that if we looked at these documents and wrote about all the uncertainty that's reflected, it would be a very different story. Now, in our first three chapters, we mentioned 13 times that the documents and the comments reflected the great uncertainty that confronted these scientists. But we're news people, and so we're presenting the news. So when we found a document from 1978 that in this discussion of uncertainty or of evolving science is really what it was about, we did what reporters do. You go to the part where it says summary. And under the word summary, the first sentence said, first of all, quoting directly, there's a general scientific consensus that the primary cause of the global warming is the burning of fossil fuels. And that document said, we only have 10 or 15 years to address this, to figure it out, before the problem is going to be locked in. And we found lots of examples like that. Modeling where Exxon scientists said they were confirming the consensus of the science that this problem posed risks, that the risk could possibly be catastrophic, and that the way to mitigate it most likely was going to be to move away from the burning of fossil fuels. And Exxon, as a large, sophisticated scientific company, deeply engaged with government and academics in the 70s and the 80s, long before this came to the public attention, were in a perfect position to understand what the other scientists that they were meeting with were saying, that here was a rising threat, that the risk had to be addressed, and that it was only a matter of time before the uncertainty was washed away by the signal. And now the signal, as you in California know very well, is unavoidable.
That's Jack Cushman with Inside Climate News, and we're also joined by Suzanne Rust with the Los Angeles Times and the Columbia Journalism School. We're going to bring in a caller now, but I first want to invite all of you who are listening to give us a call. Here's the numbers, 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org, Or better yet, you can post a web comment at yourcallradio.org. We're talking about the blockbuster investigative reporting that the LA Times and Inside Climate News have done in looking at Exxon and Exxon's treatment of climate science. And we're going to bring in a call now from, I think it's Peter in Oakland. Peter, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. What I would like to pose is the question, should our government defend us or should it defend corporations? Because as I see things like this unfold, things like PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric blowing up a part of San Bruno, poisoning Hinckley over a 20-year period, Enron, I think while our government has the power to address those things, it has the these corporations exist by means of charters. It could revoke their charter. It could seize their assets. It could make them a public resource. Which
okay,
is
Peter. Let me get our journalists to talk about this. Of course, they're journalists. They're not the government. But Suzanne and Jack, did you guys look at the criminal implications, potential criminal implications of your findings?
I have not delved into that myself. I don't know if Jack
has. How about
has.
You, Jack?
Well, we've reported in a piece on the reaction to our stories, of course, that politicians and other critics of Exxon are calling for an investigation. I'm not a specialist in the law, and it's a complex set of laws that might be used to investigate Exxon further. I'm sure that Exxon will defend itself, you know, vigorously, and are quite capable of doing that. I do think that we've called attention to a set of questions about Exxon's knowledge and Exxon's public posture and Exxon's financing of other groups to undermine the science, and that now that this is in the limelight, there will be investigations by others, by other journalists, by governments, by individual plaintiffs, and I can't predict how that'll all come out. As far as the question of are corporations too powerful and so on, well, we live in the world we live in. As journalists, our job is to draw attention to these things and not shrink away from them. Exxon sees Inside Climate News in particular as some kind of advocacy organization, and we are journalists, like the LA Times. We've won a Pulitzer Prize, and other journalistic awards. We're credentialed as journalists. You know, we go cover the news. I'm going to Paris to cover the climate talks, not to advocate for one outcome or another. Exxon has a lobbying arm. Exxon buys advocacy advertisements. Exxon contributes to corporations. Exxon pays for organizations to put out denial messages on climate science. Exxon's lobbyists were at the White House trying to get climate scientists fired from the government, fired from the International Panel on Climate Change.
Jack, let me just please interrupt you there because we're going to go to a break here shortly. We're going to return to this conversation in just a moment, and we're going to talk about two of the actions that have been big news this week. Hillary Clinton coming out and calling for an investigation, a Department of Justice investigation of ExxonMobil for allegedly lying about climate change. She joins Bernie Sanders, another Democratic presidential candidate who has already written to Attorney General Loretta Lynch urging that. So we're going to talk about that when we come back here at Your Call Radio with me, Mark Hertzgard, and we'll look forward to your calls and your emails, so keep them coming, and we'll get to that in the second half of the show.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio. Join in today's conversation. Call the toll-free number 866-798-8255 or send your email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it's Inflection Point. Following that at noon, the Tavis Smiley Show, and then this afternoon at 1, Latino USA. All here on Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco, a listener-supported community broadcast service. Thank you.
Welcome back. And for those of you just joining us, I'm Mark Hertzgaard. I'm sitting in for Rose Aguilar today. And this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. And you can also listen to past shows there and find out what's coming next. For example, on Monday, we'll be having a conversation with director Sarah Gavron and the writer Abby Morgan about their new movie, Suffragette. And Suffragette tells the history of the British suffragette movement and why women's fight for equality escalated into violence in 1912 and 1913. The suffragettes turned away from peaceful protest and felt they had to embrace militant tactics that grew to include window breaking and arson. That's Monday on Your Call with Rose Aguilar. And if you have a story idea for us, please drop us a line at feedback at Your Call Radio, or you can call us 866-798-8255. We want to hear from you and also call in today. We've got half an hour left on this broadcast. We're talking about ExxonMobil. Big news this week. The two top Democratic presidential candidates are calling on the Department of Justice to investigate ExxonMobil for lying about climate change. And those calls from Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton were sparked by recent exposés, two separate exposés, one by Inside Climate News and another by the Los Angeles Times. And we're joined by reporters from both of those teams. Suzanne Rust is with the Los Angeles Times, and she teaches at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. And she's with us from New York over the phone, and from New Jersey, we're joined by Jack Cushman. He's an environmental and energy reporter with Inside Climate News. That's a nonprofit news organization that covers energy and climate change. And as I say, we also want to hear from you. What questions do you have for our guests? Have you been following these explosive investigations by the LA Times or Inside Climate News? Or is this news to you? And what do you think about them? And can it lead to public policy changes? So give us a call. Here are the numbers again, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255, or email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Or, of course, you can post a web comment at at yourcallradio.org. So we were talking before the break about how Exxon has reacted to this. But there's also been a lot of reaction out there in the public sphere. I've mentioned already that the two top Democratic candidates to be the next president of the United States have both now called on the Justice Department to investigate Exxon here. We've also seen various interest groups, especially climate activist groups, trying to make a connection with the tobacco scandals of recent decades, where the tobacco industry was caught lying about knowing that its products were dangerous for people, and they were caught lying about it. And they ended up getting nailed by attorney generals across the nation for $50 billion settlement probably the biggest black eye in PR history. But I also want to talk a little bit with you, Jack and Suzanne, about our colleagues in the media and their reactions to these stories. Bill McKibben, who, of course, is a journalist but also an activist now, he wrote in The Nation magazine last week about this, that he's very curious to see how the rest of the media is going to react to this apparent scandal on Exxon's part. And McKibben reminded us that before the 2009 climate summit in Copenhagen, there was what McKibben called a fake scandal, the so-called ClimateGate scandal, where climate deniers hacked the emails of a bunch of scientists and tried to say that that they were lying about climate change. That became a big storyline leading up to the Copenhagen summit, and McKibben was saying that that really hurt the outcome of that summit. And he's hoping, McKibben said, that going into Paris, that the media as a whole will spend as much time on this Exxon scandal, which he said has the benefit of being true, as opposed to the ClimateGate scandal. So, Jack and Suzanne, I wonder, can you just take us through how the rest of the media has responded to your coverage, and has that response surprised you, and what do you expect in the future? Suzanne, could you start, please?
Yeah. So mostly what I've seen is sort of websites or online news sources have picked this up. Huffington Post has written about this. I think BuzzFeed has made a note here or two. Politico has written about it. So they're really picking it up. Sort of the bigger papers, they have not. I could be in error here, but I have not seen any news articles. I've seen editorials and op-eds written about it. So there does seem to be, and as these developments are occurring, where we're you have Hillary Clinton sort of getting onto this train, and Bernie Sanders, there is more coverage. So it's almost like a train sort of building up speed. So it sort of slow the beginning, sort of a trickle. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So who knows what will happen in the next few weeks? But I see sort of an acceleration in the amount of coverage that it's getting now.
And Jack, Suzanne mentions the big papers, but I haven't seen anything on this on the big TV networks. How about you?
Well, the TV networks, with occasional exceptions, tend not to cover climate change at a scale proportionate to the problem. But honestly, I haven't given much thought to that. I don't spend a lot of time watching the network news. I was gratified that Exxon's hometown newspaper, the Dallas Morning News, published our overview chapter on their front page on a Sunday under our bylines and editorialized about it. They subsequently published one of the LA Times' very fine pieces, again, in the hometown newspaper of Exxon. When I was back at a big newspaper for most of my career, when we saw this kind of thing where clearly Inside Climate News and the LA Times have amassed a wealth of information and are running away with it, I think one inclination of newspapers is to, work on their own big projects, but in a story like this, to think, what can we do to advance the story? And so I suspect that maybe some of them are still in the situation of saying, rather than just picking up this these scoops and repeating them, is there anything we could do to advance the story? And there's a lot of things, of course, that big organizations can do to advance stories like this. There are a lot of big voids in our understanding of Exxon's behavior. For example, what was Exxon doing when the Bush-Cheney Energy Task Force was meeting in secret at the White House to rewrite the energy policy of the country? The lawsuits to obtain those papers from the White House failed. Cheney beat them back, and so those papers were kept secret. But it's not clear to me that Exxon can beat back similar inquiries as to what it was saying at the time. We only have a few of those memos, and the memos we've seen raised my eyebrows when I saw what Exxon's lobbyists were telling the White House in the opening years of that administration.
Jack, of course, another common reaction among journalists, I think this is kind of an open secret among us in the profession, is that when you see something else like this, there's also a less charitable reaction of, oh, we already knew that. Come on, everybody knows that Exxon is denying the climate science. Do you think that has played any role?
Well, I would say Bill McKibben just came out and said that he's talked to people in his circles, so old diehard lefties who don't seem surprised.
No, I'm not talking about diehard lefties. I'm talking about fellow journalists.
But I was going to extend that to it. I do think there is probably an element of that. I think everybody suspected this, and maybe they're not taking it as news or something that they didn't know already. So I think you may be onto something there.
I think, though, that what really puts the lie to that point of view, frankly, is that smoking gun memo that you've got. That nobody has ever showed that. And the larger point, too, of both of your reports is that Exxon knew the science and then also knew that it was going to misrepresent that science. That's what that smoking gun memo that says emphasize the uncertainty, that seems to be very difficult. So, again, I just want to repeat, I know that both of you approached Exxon about this. Did they have any specific response to that memo? It sure smells like a smoking gun to me.
No, I think we've gotten pretty much the same response that Inside Climate News did. We've been criticized by them for cherry picking or not putting in enough emphasis on their lofty tenure of doing hard research on climate change, which I think both news organizations did give voice to in our stories. But at the end of the day, right, Exxon it's their job to fight back and to try to make us look like we didn't know what we were doing. You know, anybody who's done investigative reporting before knows this is a very typical reaction, and so they're just doing what they have to do. But no, again, I think the most damning thing that they've accused us of has been cherry picking and you know, interpreting it, these documents differently than they would have wished.
Let me bring in an email now from Jane, and before I do, let me just again invite all of our listeners to call in or give us an email. We've got two terrific reporters on the phone here for another 17 minutes. Here's the numbers you can use, 866-798-8255, or email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. So here's the email from Jane. She says, regarding the issue of ExxonMobil casting doubt about climate change, there's a film called Merchants of Doubt. It deals with these tactics being used widely in corporate America, beginning with the successful campaign by the tobacco industry spending millions of dollars spreading the lie that there was no evidence that smoking causes cancer. We touched on that, Jane from, I think, Berkeley, is that? But we touched on that a little bit earlier in the show, talking about the infamous 1971 PR memo from the tobacco industry that is taught in all the PR and investigative journalism classes that I'm aware of. That memo said, doubt is our product. Doubt is our product. And a lot of echoes of that now here with the Exxon story. So we invite all of the rest of you to call in here, and let's just dig in a little bit deeper here. Jack, you were saying that there's still holes that you'd like to investigate with this. Can I put you on the spot and ask you, is that a story you are actively, you and your colleagues at Inside Climate News are actively working right now? Do you plan to be doing more on this?
We are running like the hamster in the cage. Every now and then, you know, we get spinning so fast that we fall off and have to take a weekend off. But we have lots of documents that we haven't published that weren't germane to our initial story. Exxon, you know, has made a big point out of saying they've published 50 peer-reviewed pieces on climate change in the past 40 years, and this shows them as great scientists. And of course, we cited numerous of those studies during our work, including the one that confirmed the mainstream scientific consensus of climate sensitivity back in 1982, and another one a few years later, a chapter in the Energy Department that likewise forecast the warming in the century to come. But we're looking through all those scientific papers, learning a little more about the science, trying to see if any of this research that Exxon did could possibly substantiate the statement in Peking or Beijing of their chairman, Lee Raymond, that the year 2007, he said, was cooler, the planet was cooler than it had been 20 years before, which is just utter nonsense. It was the hottest year ever recorded, and it's been followed by about 15 even hotter years. So we're looking for where in their scientific record the substantiation is for their denial. So far, we're not finding it. The Royal Society called them out on this and said, you know, you're challenging findings of the IPCC, the authoritative Nobel Prize-winning body, even though your own scientists helped write the reports. And you've got to stop financing groups that do this. So this record is really well established over the past 10 or 15 years. What we're trying to do is to see what our readers are interested in. You know, you say that reporters at mainstream papers say we already knew that. I'm more interested in whether our readers already knew it. And judging by the traffic on our website, we have a lot of readers who weren't aware of this and are pretty interested in reading our piece or downloading the Kindle single or finding out what we have to say.
So that's Jack Cushman with Inside Climate News. You're encouraged to go to their website to read all of their stories on Exxon and its treatment of climate science. And also joining us, Suzanne Rust. She's with the Los Angeles Times team that did a parallel investigation into all this. And I also want to just mention that if you do want to hear ExxonMobil's views on this, you can go to their webpage. That's called Get the Facts, get the facts, Exxon's side of this controversy that has now led this week to the top two presidential candidates in the Democratic Party calling for a Justice Department investigation of ExxonMobil. We've got a call now. David in San Francisco. Welcome to the show, David. You're on your call.
Yeah, morning. I used to study personal injury cases, and in doing so, if you had a hazardous condition and you did nothing about it, you could usually get sued for triple damages. Your award could go against you for triple damages because of reckless endangerment. Now, when you start looking at the knowledge of global warming and you look at these major polluters and that they're actually going out of their way to deny the reality as well as subvert the democratic process, it gets into whether or not they're actually trying to get us killed, whether Malthusian economics, the idea of a massive die-off, killing us off in a major quantities so that they can have the spoils of the earth, is this what their end result is coming out to be?
Suzanne Russ, let's start with you. I mean, we touched on this a little bit earlier, the possible criminal implications of this, and the caller points out that, you face a lot larger penalty as a corporation under private property law if it's found that you knew. That you knew in advance that your products were dangerous. That's, of course, what got the tobacco industry really in trouble in the 1990s. So what's your take on this?
Well, again, I mean, I have to apologize. I'm not a legal expert, and I don't know the grounds upon which, you know, legal action could be taken. I know people are throwing out names of laws there, and I just don't know what can be done about this. But I did have a really interesting conversation with a woman at Stanford University, Terry Root. And she sort of put this in a really sort of fascinating and depressing way for me. She was she's the widow of Stephen Schneider. Stephen Schneider was a big climate change researcher at Stanford and supporter of advocates fighting against, you know, major corporations or any of those people who would throw doubt in climate change science's way. She was just retiring from Stanford. She's a conservation biologist, and her take on this is that, you know, I brought up this allusion to a train before. The train has left the station, right? There is nothing we can do at this point to stop it. And Stanford, Exxon had an opportunity, you know, back in the 80s and 90s to help sort of frame this in a way that we could all do something about it. And frankly, I think... and she would think she's the one who thinks, and her researchers, her colleagues, think that it's too late. She basically said there is no field of conservation biology anymore because there is nothing left to conserve. In the next 30, 40 years, you know, the birds that she looks at, their habitats are going to be gone. I think we should all be sort of wondering and thinking about what this world is going to look like and reflect back on what we could have done.
Let's talk a little bit in that regard about another aspect of your reporting here, and both of you touched on this, but I want to ask you about it, Jack, is how Exxon decided after it knew the science of climate change, how it allegedly decided that, you know, we're going to deny this. And then in the 1990s, Exxon became, if I'm not mistaken, the number one funder of basically climate denier front groups, organizations, and lobbying activities, especially in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, in fact, one of the episodes that bubbles up in the narrative here again is when the American Petroleum Institute and an Exxon lobbyist, and joined by, as a matter of fact, a former tobacco lobbyist, set up a team to introduce new scientists into the conversation, and it happened to be their memo was leaked to me, and I published it on the front page back in 1998, and it said the people who are opposing the controls on carbon dioxide haven't done enough to emphasize the uncertainty, and we need to have a science team who will push that message out the door, and we'll know when we've won, when the general opinion in the public is that it's just too much uncertainty to ever do anything about this. And one of the things that I'm grappling with is how better to explain to the public as they shift their opinion back to a more solid understanding of global warming, a shift which we're seeing before our eyes, is to help explain the meaning of uncertainty in science and why it's not the case that uncertainty stops action. As a matter of fact, the scientific and economic papers that I'm reviewing make it very clear that the more the uncertainty, the more you need insurance, and that uncertainty, if anything, increases the payoff to companies to take and countries to take strong actions against climate science. You know, one big difference between tobacco and climate change is that the smokers were killing themselves, and to some extent, secondhand smoke was killing others, but it was doing it more or less on the spot. Secondhand climate change kills people 100, 200, 300 years from now, and it's a little help to say, well, those people can come back and sue Exxon. Since that smoking gun memo that you keep mentioning was published, I think, in, was written in 1988, Exxon's carbon footprint has been, that is from burning the fuel that it produces, has been about 18 gigatons of carbon dioxide, and that's equivalent to 3 years' emissions by the United States. And so at some point, we're now at the point where we have to precipitously reduce the emissions, or else we're going to be causing secondhand climate change on our grandchildren and their grandchildren.
That, of course, is going to be a big conversation at the Paris summit in December. Starts actually November 30th. All the countries in the world coming together to try and reach an agreement on a package of emission reductions to keep temperature rise in some degree of limits. I just want to mention that when Suzanne, you referenced earlier Terry Root's conversation with you. That it's too late. Some things are already locked in with climate change, but there's an awful lot of people going to Paris who are determined to save what is possible still to be saved. And what's been striking is not just that there's such a strong popular movement now, but so many people at the elite level. You now have the International Monetary Fund and the head of state of Germany, and a lot of very mainstream people saying we need action now. It has to be serious. It has to be we need a price on carbon emissions that would get the power of the marketplace working to reduce emissions. So let me just, we're in the final minutes here. Let me ask both of you, how do you see this, your investigative reporting on Exxon feeding into public awareness at Paris? And do both of you plan to be covering the summit in Paris in December? Suzanne, why don't you start?
I suspect that this will come up in Paris. I think, you know, there have been there's a band of oil companies that have gotten together who have pledged to make a difference, to look into cutting emissions, and Exxon has not joined that group. And I suspect there will be a spotlight on that. I think maybe I have no idea, but I suspect there will be momentum around this issue because of this reporting. You know, when people start talking about uncertainty, I suspect there might be a little more skepticism about that than there was in the past.
And will you be publishing anything more between now and then, Suzanne?
Yes, we will be.
Aha. Uh-huh. And I'm sure you'd like to tell us all today what it is.
We'll know nothing about it until it comes out.
All right. And Jack, give us your thoughts on all this. You've been covering this beat for a long time, and you've watched the public interest and awareness of this wax and wane. How do you look at it now in the year 2015?
Well, the Paris meeting is of course, enormously important. They're not going to solve the problem in Paris, but they're going to bend the curve, and they're going to try to set things up so that we can keep working this problem and be responsible citizens of the world. One of the most interesting things we found in the early documents on Exxon was the degree to which their researchers understood that as the world warmed and it became an unmistakable signal and not just a theory, that the time would come when our government and the world's governments would have to address this on a global basis, and that they couldn't say when that was going to happen, but they certainly recognized and stated explicitly that that would be a major risk to Exxon if it were to just continue on a business as usual course. And so of all the things that Exxon knew, one of the most interesting is that they knew that a time and a place like Paris was going to arrive someday.
That's so interesting. My own reporting for Business Week magazine, the Exxon told me after the big People's Climate March in New York City, September 2014, that he said that that many people getting into the streets is going to change. It's definitely going to put pressure on governments to act. And in fact, he said it led Exxon to change its own internal calculations of how soon that day of reckoning would come. So people in the streets can have an impact. We're going to have to leave it there today. We've been speaking about ExxonMobil and climate change and the explosive investigative reporting suggesting that the company knowingly lied about climate science beginning in the 1980s. Joining us have been Suzanne Rush. She's been with the Los Angeles Times team on this, and Jack Cushman of Inside Climate News. Thank you to both of you for joining us. Congratulations on your reporting. Thanks for your phone calls and emails. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of you. I'm Mark Hertzgard, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call, and here is what's coming up on Monday. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with director Sarah Gavron and screenwriter Abby Morgan about their new movie, Suffragette. It tells the history of the foot soldiers in the British suffragette movement in the early 20th century and why they had to resort to militant tactics to win equal voting rights. Who were these women? And what did they achieve, and why does suffragette matter today? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.